This is Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Try to put on the show.
It is Danny and Gallant. Michael Bumpus in for Paul Gallant, who's down in Miami. Somebody checked in, the 509, asking if Paul has been concussed by a falling iguana yet. No, I think it was in the 60s for poor little Paul. We'll hear about his full temperature report and if there were any reptiles that were plummeting onto his head. Michael Bumpus is in with us today. And first, I got some good news for you, Bump.
What's that?
You want the good news?
Let me hear it.
The good news is you've got a franchise quarterback. Nobody doubts this. The thing that everybody spends all their time looking for, and is so-and-so elite? Is he a franchise quarterback? Do you have your franchise quarterback? You got it. You got it here in Seattle. Now you want the bad news?
Yes.
You got a franchise quarterback who's making franchise quarterback money. That's the bad news. Mike Greenberg on Get Up, ESPN's morning show, kind of laid it out because there is a certain amount of insanity in the entire discussion that what do we spend talking about any team that isn't winning? We talk about, do they have their quarterback? Do they have their quarterback? Do you have your quarterback? Is Baker Mayfield the quarterback for Cleveland? They thought he was last year. Maybe now not so much. How about Arizona? Is Kyler Murray the quarterback? Do you have a quarterback? Any team that's not good, it's the only thing anybody asks about. Then the team gets good, and after that initial upsurge in success, and maybe they get to the point where they're making the playoffs. They're consistently making the playoffs, but they're not winning. The question becomes whether or not too much money is being spent on said quarterback. And that was the scenario that Mike Greenberg outlined here in cut number three when he talked about the challenges that a team faces when their quarterback starts making top shelf money.
No team has won a Super Bowl when their quarterback ranks in the top five in the NFL in cap hit. That's just the reality of the situation. But this is a hard cap sport without an exemption, which I think there should be for quarterbacks or franchise players. But there isn't one because the owners don't want to give away more money, to your point. And I'm merely saying that at some point, in the way the system is set up, you are robbing Peter to pay Paul with every contract you sign.
He's right.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter that the system's wrong. And it brings up an interesting question of how do you win when you have a quarterback that is taking up that size of the salary cap? Or do you inevitably kind of settle into this spot where Seattle is, where your quarterback's good enough? You've got the quarterback that everybody wants because he annually gives you a shot to get into the playoffs. How do you then make up the difference and get over the hump?
You have to draft well, and you have to develop. And I think that's what the Seahawks do. At least as of late, they draft well and they develop. You see a Shaquille Griffin making his Pro Bowl appearance. You see a Cody Barton who looks like he'll be a baller for years to come. You see a DK Metcalf who looks like he can get it done. So once you reach the point where your quarterback is making a lot of money, you got to pick up the slack elsewhere. And how do you do that? You develop and you draft. So it's a tricky game. You know, it's a tricky game because you have to pay the quarterback. In my opinion, that's the most important position on the football field. You got to pay this guy. You got to keep him here. But then you look at the stats and it's like, all right, if you're top five getting paid, you're probably not going to win a Super Bowl. So it's tricky, man. What's the right formula? I don't know. You know, here's the right formula. You draft a quarterback, get him on that rookie contract and win now and hope it all works out. I mean, other than that, you go off the numbers, man. If you're getting paid, other spots on your team are going to hurt.
It's totally true. It's an inevitable reality of how it works. It was easier for Seattle to win when Russell Wilson was the best bargain in professional sports, when they were paying Russell Wilson on a rookie contract. Not only that, but he was a third-round pick. There was nothing you could do. And then the beauty of it was that if Russell said, okay, you know what, I really do deserve more money than this, the Seahawks could look at him and say, honestly, we agree, but our hands are tied. We cannot give you an extension until after your third season. We'd love to tear up your contract and give you a brand new one right now. We just can't. Like, that's the rules. It's set up that way. The one question, and I hadn't thought about this before we had the opening segment when we talked about this issue, is the comparison to the NBA. Because the NBA, they don't have a hard cap, but they do have a salary cap. And it makes it tougher for teams to sign free agents from outside the team. And we've seen free agents in the NBA who have been willing to not max out their contract, to take less than they otherwise would be paid. LeBron James did not take the most money he could possibly get from Miami in exchange to go there. But the interesting thing is what he did get to do that is he got some control. He got control over where that other money was going to go, where I'll take less, but you're going to sign Chris Bosch. Like, you don't get to put that money in your pocket and decide what you're going to do. Like, that has to be done in concert. Like, we're making this decision together.
Yeah, and is there any player in the NFL who has that type of influence on an organization? You would think Tom Brady, maybe Drew Brees, but I just don't see that happening. I think the NBA is so progressive, it's crazy. You know, you got guys like LeBron, who is pretty much a general manager on whatever team he plays for. He's making decisions. And I think it comes down to, one, there's only five guys on the court at one time, so one player has a lot of influence on the game. And two, the world plays basketball. So LeBron James is not just a superstar in the U.S. He's a global superstar. So he has more influence. He brings more to the table. He brings more revenue to the NBA. I think the NFL, guys aren't super marketable. You know, you got helmets on, and it's all about the quarterback. So there are a lot of different variables that come into that decision making. But NBA, contracts are guaranteed. Superstars have influence. And NFL is just a totally different beast.
It is. The part about marketing and the value, a basketball player's salary is worth a significantly lower percentage of their net earning potential in the NBA compared to the NFL. Mm-hmm. Basketball players, and what LeBron James gets for different ads he does, certainly for the shoe contract he has with Nike, those things, they make it. Michael Jordan, for years in his first run with the Bulls, his salary was significantly lower than a player of his caliber that you would expect. He was not making as much money as Shaquille O'Neal in his first deal. And some of that was because of how much money he got from Nike as that first sort of superstar shoe contract came through. He also took out every penny that he could later on in his contract when it came up for renewal toward the end of that run. The second part of it, though, and I think this is an interesting contrast, relates to control, which is LeBron James, while he hasn't necessarily taken top dollar, he's exercised much more control over not just the roster, but signing short-term contracts where he can choose to leave at the end of them. He's got much more control. My reaction to it is that that's a terrible situation for a franchise to be in. Not terrible. You get LeBron James, and it's better than not having him. But that players are not necessarily – I don't want players making the personnel decisions. If I was going to say how best does a team work, and I think LeBron's career is a pretty good demonstration of that, because LeBron does have more control over his teammates, and he tends to pick goofballs to play with. Like, whether it's Rajon Rondo, or they're going to have DeMarcus Cousins down there this year. Who's the other kid? The one from Long Island, Lance Stevenson. He was down there with, like, LeBron tends to collect goofballs that kind of do odd jobs that aren't really that good offensively. I don't think he's the best judge of talent. And if I was a quarterback in the NFL and somebody said, hey, we want you to take less than you otherwise could get, I'd like, okay, then I get a say over where it goes. But I don't know if players are necessarily the best equipped to make those sort of decisions.
Maybe not. You know, and with LeBron, and again, with basketball, it's LeBron has influence on decisions, one, because he's LeBron, and two, he has more of an impact on the play itself, right? In the NFL, you got someone upstairs on the sideline calling the plays. They're calling the plays and to which they think puts you in the best situation. So whereas basketball is such a free-flowing game, LeBron can be like, hey, I need a guy who can spot up in the corner and just shoot this. I'll get him the ball. Don't worry about it. Or I need a lockdown defender on the days that, you know, I'm not feeling it. You know, in football, man, it's just the players don't have control over what's going on. Quarterbacks may be able to go to the line of scrimmage and audible out of things, but they aren't calling the plays. They don't have a lot of impact on the play calling. So they don't have – I see why owners and coaches wouldn't want them involved in the personnel deal, because they're not the ones actually calling the plays, you know? So it's if anyone were to have some type of influence, Tom Brady would have to be the first one, you know? And something tells me that him, Robert Kraft, and Belichick do sit down and they do talk about these things. Drew Brees, they'll sit down and talk about these things. Once you reach a certain level of in your career, once you're a Hall of Famer, you're getting in there. There's only a few guys that I feel like would have some influence. I just named them: Tom Brady, Drew Brees, maybe an Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers got his coach out of there, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
So it all depends on how you play. How much of an impact do you have on the game? And the only player in the NFL who can have such a big impact is the quarterback.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that, that the quarterback's the only one that can do that. The quarterback market this offseason is going to be fascinating. I think there's going to be the possibility of huge changes. You've got two veteran Hall of Fame, in one case, maybe the greatest ever, in Tom Brady. And in the other case, you've got Phillip Rivers, who has certainly had his production as Hall of Fame caliber. Both of those guys, it's very possible that they are going to change teams this offseason. That's wild. Throw in, then you've got Jameis Winston, who is also scheduled to be a free agent, and Tampa Bay is going to have a huge decision about whether or not they want to bring him back. If you're the Bucs, do you try and retain him, thinking that, hey, he's going to improve and turn the corner? Do you look at it and say, like, well, he got a 30-30. What? He got us to 30-30, but you can't have that many interceptions. Like, you can't go through that sort of season with him. I'll be really interested to see how the dominoes start to fall, and especially, are more teams going to look at the success Baltimore had and think that, do you want sort of a Kirk Cousins-ish, he's a top 10 maybe, but more like he's the upper half of the league starting quarterback at $25 or $30 million, which is the going price, or do you want to get a young guy and try and win with it? Dallas, if you're Dallas, do you extend Dak Prescott at a huge $35 million a year contract to make him long-term? Or do you kind of try and see if, well, could we get a younger guy in here that can be almost as good or maybe more athletic and get more out of him? I think there'll be some really interesting decisions that get made.
And Dallas, you got to go with Dak, man. I mean, it's so hard to find a franchise quarterback. Every year there's about 2/3 of the league who are looking for their next quarterback. You know, it's so hard. So that's what makes it tough, because it's hard to find a good quarterback. Yet when you do, eventually they're going to want to get paid. You know, so do you start over every 3 or 4 years, or do you kind of ride it out and just pay the man and take hits somewhere else? The stats say you should go 3 or 4 years and get rid of him and bring in a young guy and start all over. But it's so hard to go against production. You know what you're going to get out of a guy. You've worked with him for a while. He's proven that he can be successful in this league. Whereas with a rookie quarterback, you're just rolling the dice and hoping you come out all right.
Yeah. And the first time you have a situation where you let a franchise quarterback go and then end up with Dookie there at that position because you thought you could. I mean, seriously, like, that's going to happen. Like, you're going to look like the all-time. And NFL general managers and coaches, by and large, the one thing they hate most is looking dumb like that, where you had gold in your hands and you let it slip away. Like, how do you let that sort of thing go? And in that way, I think Dak's worth it. And certainly, if you're going to pay Ezekiel Elliott, I can't imagine not paying Dak Prescott. I think Dak's a very good quarterback. But that's a tough decision, because you're kind of being asked to make the level of commitment that Seattle's made to Russell Wilson, and he hasn't had that level of success. You've had one incredible season when he was a rookie, but that was a point where he wasn't as pivotal a part of the offense. And this year, there's no other way to put it, this year was a disappointment.
It was a disappointment. He played well, though.
He did?
He played well, you know, and it's unfortunate that a team's success is always, it always goes back to the quarterback. Win or lose, it always goes back to the quarterback. Dak had a good year, didn't make the playoffs, so people are questioning whether you pay this guy or not. I think where they messed up is they paid Zeke Elliott too much, man.
Yeah.
I mean, we talked about that running back spot. You know, you need help elsewhere now. So, quarterback, man, you win, you get all the love when you win, you get all the love when you lose. So it is what it is.
Yeah, and the 360 pointing out, did Garoppolo get paid or did he not get paid? He absolutely did get paid. And Garoppolo is one of the people, he is as close to being that sort of the outlier in that stat that Greenberg offered, because he is up there. His cap hit was loaded toward last year, so that's why he's not among the top five cap hits. And he's played well, but he's in that sort of situation. Even though he's not a rookie, he's surrounded by all these rookies.
Yeah.
He has certainly not been asked to do as he didn't get asked to do nearly as much as Lamar Jackson or Russell Wilson did this season.
No, heck no. He took advantage of timing. He went to a team that needed a quarterback who had all these number one draft picks around him and some money to spend. That's the perfect situation for Jimmy Garoppolo.
All right. Our playoff coverage is brought to you by Washington Farm Bureau Healthcare. We're going to have Around the NFL coming up next, but I do want people, somebody texted in, hey, can you talk about the XFL, because we don't know what's going on? Why, yes, in fact, we will. In fact, we're going to have the commissioner of the XFL on. Oliver Luck's going to join us in studio. That's coming up at 9:30, but right now we're going Around the NFL.
It's time to go around the NFL. Brought to you by Toyota of Puyallup. The bottom line on the biggest stories in the NFL every morning at 9:15 with Danny and Gallant.
Today's an exceptional day.
Maura, how are you?
I'm doing awesome. How are you guys today?
Today is an exceptional day, Maura. It's Friday.
I like the passion.
This is kind of the dead Friday in the calendar, though, right? We're going to get set for this weekend's game between the AFC and the NFC. Conference pride is... No, one's pride is on the line this weekend.
Well, let's see how you feel about this huge news that Gary Kubiak is the new offensive coordinator for the Minnesota Vikings.
Yeah. Do you think that comes with, like, a warning of, like, when you become Mike Zimmer's offensive coordinator, they're like... You are going to get your butt chewed out weekly. Like, this is just part of the job. I'm going to come in and I'm going to scream at you 2 to 3 times a week, and I'm probably not going to stop for a good 15 minutes. So is that something you think that you're prepared to? This is his third offensive coordinator, I believe, in 3 years.
He has 5 coordinators in 5 years. I mean, goodness, if I'm a coordinator for Zimmer, every morning I'm waking up, I'm looking at my email. Do I still have a job today? I mean, it's tough, but I guess Kubiak makes sense, though. He was already in the building. He was kind of like the mentor to Stefanski, the new head coach for the Browns. So it makes sense. It's a transition. He's been an OC before. He's won a Super Bowl. So he's more than qualified. I just don't know about job security under Zimmer.
Have you ever had an awful boss? Just a god-awful boss.
Yes, I have.
Because I had one, and actually, my boss is the one reason that I'm suspicious of Tom Flores. I'll explain why in a second. But George Kamian, who was in charge of Kamian's Pharmacy, was a jerk. He once got mad at me for telling him I couldn't work because I had to go with my family to church on Christmas Eve. Like, shamed me about it and told me that I was a mama's boy or something. Like, the guy was a jerk. My strategy would be that I would hold a broom. I would go to a spot in the pharmacy that he couldn't see me, and I would just sit there and hold my broom. And anytime he came near, I would steadily zone out for 20, 25 minutes at a time. I once spent a half an hour in the bathroom reading, in which I just didn't. My pants were firmly affixed, but I was just sitting on the toilet reading because I didn't want to deal with his stuff anymore. He was the childhood best friend of Tom Flores. And anybody you talk to will tell you that Tom Flores was the nicest person in the world, the former Seahawks coach, and he's the GM too. And I was always suspicious of him because I was like, anybody that's good friends with that jerk can't be all that nice.
Opposites attract.
Eli Manning officially announced his retirement today. Here's a little bit from his press conference.
For most of my life, people have called me easy. Believe me, there is nothing easy about today. Wellington Mara always said, once a giant, always a giant. For me, it's only a giant. Thank you so much.
I don't get it.
He's such a dork.
I don't get it. How are you easy? What are you easy? I don't get it.
There's nothing easy today. I think that's it. He was easy Eli. Oh, come on, easy Eli. I have no idea. I don't have any clue. I just know that. I heard Bomani Jones say earlier this week that Eli Manning is the answer to the question of what would happen if Derek Jeter was a gigantic dork. That's essentially what Eli is. He's like a tuck-in-your-polo shirt kind of. He's really successful in a city that, look, he's made his reputation. He is one of the New York Giants' best players ever.
Yeah.
There'll be a lot of question about whether he's a Hall of Famer or not, but there could be no doubting he is an absolute dork.
He's, you know, initially I didn't think he was. And I go back, I look at his accomplishments. He's 7th in passing. I mean, 2 Super Bowls, 2 Super Bowl MVPs. He's got to be. First ballot, I don't know. But he's got to get in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah. He will get in the Hall of Fame. I think it's an interesting question of how much does... Because he won playoff games in 2 seasons.
Yeah.
And he won big playoff games and won all the playoff games in each of those seasons. But those were the only two years that he won playoff games. But yeah, believe me, there's nothing easy about today.
All right, as we mentioned earlier, Jarvis Landry won the Pro Bowl dodgeball competition yesterday. Here's a little bit of that.
The only two remaining for the AFC. It's 4-2, advantage NFC. As Landry gives up the balls. I mean, he's going to sit back here and say, I'll rely on my hands. and he does so. And again, a twofer. How about that from Jarvis Landry? This is a one sequence. He gets rid of two opponents.
I don't know about dodgeball, but I think Tessitore and Booger have found their calling.
They sound good. They sound good.
Seriously, like the overly serious announcer intonations, like, is a perfect match. Yes, that's somewhere that Joe Tessitore can take too seriously. I'll listen to him do dodgeball.
Yeah, I'll listen all day. And Landry, I know you don't like it. He's not throwing the dodgeballs back at people, but he's just playing his game. He's got some of the best hands in the league, so use your hands to your advantage. I ain't mad.
It's a bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off for him.
He was giving them, hey, here, try and peg me. Go ahead, try and peg me. It was like a little puppy dog. Like, I'd like to fetch this ball. Can you just throw it at me and I'll do that?
What would be your dodgeball strategy?
Well, actually, I've played dodgeball, and it's not so far in the past. Up at Cal Anderson Park on Capitol Hill on weekend nights, quite frequently, say you get to about 11, 1130, midnight, dodgeball breaks out there. I've played dodgeball up there in a full suit. my strategy has generally been to make as much of a spectacle out of myself as I can. It's not very, I don't last very long, but I'm trying to throw it as hard as possible at the person that's closest to me. That's my strategy.
I like it. What's your thing with doing athletics in full suits?
Yeah,
you
that
did the
one
combine once too, right?
That was to try and make up and make people wonder if the reason is he so slow because he's wearing a suit. He can't possibly, like, that was trying to save my pride. This was more, hey, I was out. Why is there dodgeball happening there? Oh, you know what would be really funny is me going over there in a tie and playing dodgeball.
Did they find it funny?
My wife did not. Not entertained. She did not find humor in my approach.
All right, one last story here, guys. We do have some breaking news this morning on Antonio Brown. His bond was set at $100,000 for a felony burglary with battery charge. The judge did decide that he will be required to get a mental health evaluation, be monitored by GPS, and release his passport and guns.
At least somebody's stepping in what is, I think, to anyone's outside observation, a clearly dangerous situation in which police are being repeatedly summoned to his house to deal with confrontations, whether it's with the mother of his children or, in this case, a moving truck operator who alleges that he was battered and before items were taken. I think that it's a step toward making sure that no one else, including Antonio Brown, gets hurt. It's a really scary situation to see someone who has very firmly lost control of really what reality is and seems to be acting out in a way that's almost incomprehensible.
I'm watching this go down and I see a guy who needs structure and accountability. Like, who are you hanging out with? Who's in your circle that's allowing you to act this way? You know, usually when guys are celebrities and make the money that he's making, you have guys around you that kind of keep you out of trouble. You know, he's not surrounding himself with the right people. I'm glad now he has some structure. He can't go anywhere, take his passport. He's got to be at the house. He needs some reflection and he does need some help. It sucks that it got to this point, but I think it'll be the best for him.
Now, we did get a text message regarding my observations about Eli Manning from the 907. Danny is the expert on dorkiness. This is 100% correct and why you need to take my evaluation of Eli Manning very seriously. There's an expression where people will say game recognizes game. And I think that's partly true, but equally true is geek recognizing geek. And Eli Manning is a dork, as I am. It's Danny and Gallant. Michael Bumpus is sitting in. We've got Oliver Luck, the commissioner of the XFL. He's going to join us next.
You're listening to Danny and Gallant.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
It is Danny and Gallant. Michael Bumpus in today for Paul Gallant. We're really excited because right now in the studio, we have the commissioner of the XFL, a league that is going to be beginning before you know it. In fact, we've got opening games coming up the weekend after the Super Bowl. And right now, Oliver Luck, commissioner of the XFL, is with us. First of all, welcome, Oliver. We appreciate you taking the time.
Well, thanks for having me, Danny. Michael, it's good to chat with y'all.
You know, it's going to be really fun to see. And like I said, the season is going to be starting before we know it. I know that training camps and workouts that have been in Houston have already been conducted. We're going to have rosters that will be announced shortly. How do you feel the lead up to this season has gone?
So for us, one of the big questions was, how do we start from scratch and give our teams enough time to really coalesce and gel and play good football, right? Because it's, you know, we have to put good football, you know, on the fields. And, of course, with our broadcast partners, Fox and ESPN, they expect that. So we had about 3 weeks of what we called sort of our mini camps in December. Guys came in and were able to learn the offense, defense, special teams, get all the terminology down. And then we spent 3 weeks this month, right, in January, in Houston, full pads. And the great thing was we could take all eight of our teams with these constant joint practices and scrimmages and mock games and really get a sense of, you know, a team's particular strength or weakness, right? So we had seven or eight trades because the team realized, oh, my gosh, I've got a couple excess tight ends that I can pawn off on somebody else who needs a tight end, but I need help at the slot or, you know, at cornerback or whatever. So we had some really good work in Houston. I think we've got a lot of parity in the league. We obviously, as we launch, want to have games that are close going into the fourth quarter, ideally one-score games. I think the quarterback play was pretty good. You know, we made an effort to really focus on getting the best quarterbacks we possibly could, the best guys not under contract to an NFL team. So we signed guys like Landry Jones, spent, you know, 6-7 years as Ben's backup in Pittsburgh, and great Oklahoma quarterback. He's playing for his old coach, Bob Stoops, in Dallas. We signed Matt McGloin. He's with the New York team. Kevin Gilbride is their head coach, former OC of the Giants when they won those Super Bowls. And these guys can play. They're experienced guys. They've played in the NFL. They won NFL games. For whatever reason, they're not on an NFL roster. But, you know, we really made a sort of a special effort and spent more money doing this to get quarterbacks in, because the quarterback play is so determinative of the overall quality of the game. If you've got a guy running the post pattern who's open, you got to hit him, right? Because that's football. Good football means quarterback has the ability to hit that guy in stride, and a guy catches it, touchdown. That's a great play. We all get excited. So that's what I saw down in Houston. Now, so I'm pleasantly surprised with sort of the quality of play that we have.
So that's me growing up. I think XFL. I think of the WWE, all that stuff that's going on. For the people who don't know, is this a revamped league, or are you going to see some of the old XFL as well?
You'll see nothing of the old XFL outside of the name XFL. So that was 2001. That was He Hate Me. That was a lot of sort of gimmicks, if you will. And when I took this job about a year and a half ago, Vince McMahon, our owner, our visionary, you know, I said to Vince, if we're going to build a football league, you want me to build a football league, let's do it in the proper, sensible, respectful way. Football's too important to people. Football's our national religion. You know, Saturday or Sunday afternoon, we go to our secular cathedrals to worship football, right? It's clearly America's favorite sport. So we tried to build this league, you know, by playing real football, 11-on-11, four-down football. We have a handful of innovations, but we think they make sense. We think we've taken this great game of football and made it just a little bit better with some of our rule innovations. But there'll be nothing of that old swagger, you know, that existed back in 2001 with WWE. I think Vince really learned his lesson from that. I certainly did. I watched some of those games probably like you did, and, you know, I wasn't impressed with the quality of play. And ultimately, you know, people love football. People also know football. Yeah. They know what they see, and, you know, they can tell if the quality of play is where it should be, and I think in our case it will be, and that's because we've kind of avoided all the hoopla, all the other stuff, right, and have focused on football. And I'll say this as well. Guys like Bob Stoops, head coach, Mark Trestman, Jim Zorn here in Seattle, Winston Moss, former NFL player who was a longtime assistant coach for Mike McCarthy, those are football guys. They're football men, right? They don't do gimmicks either, right? You know, Stoops said to me, hey, I'll coach in your league, Oliver, but I'm not going to coach it if it's sort of gimmicky and cheesy, mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Because those guys are real, you know, real respected football men.
We're talking to Oliver Luck, who's the commissioner of the XFL. The Seattle Dragons are our franchise. They're going to begin their season at Washington, D.C. That's February 8th. You can watch the game at 11 a.m. on ABC. The home opener is February 15th. It'll be at CenturyLink Field. Seattle's sold and expecting more than 20,000 fans. They've actually been leading the XFL in season ticket sales. What I wanted to ask, commissioners, where do you see this league fitting into the broader perspective of football? I read Football for a Buck, which was written by Jeff Perlman. It was about the USFL.
It was a good book.
It is. It's interesting to think about kind of where you see your product Is it a developmental league for the NFL? Is it a sort of an off-season fix for the football fan? Where do you see your league fitting in?
So, first of all, we don't view ourselves as competing with the National Football League. I love the NFL. You know, the NFL is incredibly powerful. It's a juggernaut league. It's arguably the most successful sports league in the world. So we view ourselves really as a complement. You know, football stops on February 2nd with the Super Bowl. At least historically, that's been the case. There's a lot of people who are despondent. I'm one of them, right, because the season's over, and we've gotten used to sort of watching college on Saturday and NFL on Sunday. So we view ourselves really as a complement in the spring to offer good quality football on great broadcasters, Fox, ESPN, ABC, to sort of, you know, quench that desire to continue to watch football. We think there are enough players out there that are very good, very capable, very talented, just not quite good enough, you know, to stick with the NFL. In fact, I was watching one of our scrimmages this past week in Houston. Sammy Coates, wide receiver, played at Auburn, high draft choice, All-American player. I look at that guy, he's with the Houston team, and I say, why isn't this guy in the NFL? He's big, he's fast, he's strong, he looks great in camp, catching every ball. But there's a reason. Yep. For whatever reason, right? He may be a little bit distracted, may have, you know, been injured, may have been in the wrong place at the wrong time, may have not impressed, you know, a particular coach. You know all the reasons why, Michael. So there's so many good players out there, and I think that's one of the differences from, let's say, 15 or 20 years ago or 30 years ago with the USFL. They did sign a couple of star players, the USFL, Herschel Walker and Jim Kelly. But I would argue that the guys that we have signed are that same caliber of player. So I think – football has changed. I think we're watching sort of peak football right now. There are so many good players and, you know, good coaches out there that I believe we can deliver this sort of quality, high-quality game that fans want, fast-paced, up-tempo. And ultimately, you know, I think it's a fix, really, for all those passionate, diehard football fans who really miss the game in, you know, in the spring. I'm a football diehard. I don't transfer my football viewing habits to baseball, for example, or even to college hoops. You know, I like college basketball, but I watch the tournament, and then it's done, right? So I think there are a lot of people that will tune in because they simply miss watching the game. It's their favorite sport, and why not offer another, you know, 10, 12 weeks of really high-quality football? That's sort of our theory. And we want to build these franchises to be, you know, self-sustaining, standalone with their own profiles. We certainly, you know, have great respect for the NFL, and, you know, I used to work for the league. Almost all of our staff has some connection with an NFL team or with the league office, but we're not there to develop players for the NFL. That's not our goal. Our goal is to really fill the spring with high-quality football.
You mentioned fast pace. I think you guys cut the play clock down a little bit. What do you expect the duration of a football game to be now? Typically, the NFL is about 3.5 hours, 3, 45 minutes. What are you thinking?
So we've got a 25-second play clock, and that's different than the 40-second play clock in the NFL. Our team has been training with that play clock in mind for the last, really, 6-7 weeks. So we think we can get the same number of plays. It's about 170, typical NFL game, 170 plays, same number of plays in a game under 3 hours.
Nice.
It's almost like the old school American Football League, the AFL, back in the Joe Namath, you know, days when games had to be done under 3 hours, right? You know, people didn't want to, you know, sit much longer than that. So we're kind of compressing all that action, so there are fewer stops. Instead of three timeouts, a half a team has two, with the play clock the way it runs, right? We think we can get all those games done under 3 hours and offer the same sort of level of excitement and quality of play.
We're talking to Oliver Luck. We're really grateful he had time to join us. Last question for you, Commissioner. Which rule are you more excited to see how it pans out? There's two that I'm pretty particularly excited. Extra points, which will now be kind of divided. After a touchdown, you can't kick the extra point. You can run a play from the 2 for 1 point, from the 5 for 2 points, or from the 10 for 3 points. Or is it the overtime, which is more like a hockey shootout with 5 rounds? The offense, the two teams alternate a single play from the 5-yard line with each score being worth 2 points. Which of those two are you most excited to see how it plays out?
I'm most excited about, you know, the extra points because we'll have a bunch of those, right, in every game. Who knows how many overtimes we'll have. We may only have one or may have zero, you know, throughout the course of the season. But I love the extra point because it's all strategy. You score a touchdown, you get 6 points, and then the head coach has to decide to go for 1, 2, or 3, you know. And do you roll the dice? We had one coach who said he'll remain unnamed. He said, you know, if I score in a defensive touchdown, a pick six, scoop and score, whatever, that quick momentum shift, he said, that's when I'll go for 3 because I've got the defense on their heels a little bit. Mm. Yeah, that might be a good strategy. It might not be. I don't know. The other one I like, if I could mention, and it's a pretty simple tweak that we made to the punt rule. So in the NFL, the gunners, those are the guys lined up outside, sort of like wide receivers. The gunners in the NFL can leave on the snap, and they take off their haul and tail to get down to, you know, to tackle the punt returner. We're holding our punters until the ball is kicked, right? They can't release. They can't cross the line of scrimmage until the ball is kicked. That gives the punt returner about 2 extra seconds to field the ball.
Love it.
And so we think we'll have hardly any fair catches. I mean, you can have a fair catch in our league, and I'm sure we'll have a couple, but we think we'll have hardly any fair catches. And we'll have returns. Fans love the punt return. It's one of the great plays in football. And so that's like the thought process that we went through. Okay, that's a good thought. Maybe it's a little bit safer, right? Because you don't have those collisions that, you know, that you get. But the punt returner is going to have an extra second or two, you know, to make a move and hopefully, you know, break a long one. So that's one that I'm really looking forward to. As an old quarterback, I wasn't very much a special teams guy, but I always loved punt returners. Watching Billy White Shoes Johnson back in the day and some of those great players, you know, from the 70s and 80s. So that was sort of the thought process behind our punt. That's a little bit of a different thing. But if I had to pick one, I would pick the extra point, 1, 2, or 3. That's just pure old-fashioned strategy. And what do we as fans like to do? We like to second-guess our coaches. We're all Monday morning quarterbacks. This is just one more area where we can second-guess the coach.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what. Michael Bumpus is sold on the idea.
Sold.
Holding the gunners.
Well, yeah, anybody who's returned punts would like to have an extra 2 seconds. Am I right, Michael?
Definitely.
That's right.
Oliver, we're really grateful for your time. We're looking forward to seeing the Seattle Dragons take the field. Their season opener is on February 8th. That's 11 a.m. You can watch it on ABC. And then the next week, February 15th, we'll be here at CenturyLink Field. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Danny. Thank you, Michael.
Thank you.
That is Oliver Luck. We're going to be back to raise flags, throw flags, and maybe pick up a flag or two. That's coming up next here on Danny and Gallant.
From the pocket, and flags everywhere.
Flag on the play.
Now there's a flag down.
Every morning at 9:45 with Danny and Gallant. Brought to you by Carter Volkswagen.
If the noise persists, the defense will be charged with a timeout.
Flag on the play.
It is that time where we all get together and we preside over just what has happened over the previous 3 hours. Should be pretty fun to talk about what happened today. Michael Bumpus has been in the last 2 days for Paul Gallant. Bump, it's been awesome to have you in here.
Hey, I love working with y'all.
Very, very fun. We have numerous observations. I would say half dozen saying that Oliver Luck sounded like Bob Stelton.
I agree.
Did anybody else hear that?
Yeah.
Did he sound like Stelton?
I didn't catch that.
Once I saw it popped up on the text screen, then I started listening. I'm like, yeah, I can hear it for sure.
We also always get texts that Jake sounds like Tom Brady. Jake Heaps.
Maybe I'm getting influenced because I saw that too, and I started listening. I'm like, he does sound like Tom Brady. So tell me what everyone sounds like.
I think he sounds specifically like Tom Brady during the halftime interview with Jim Gray on Westwood One. Like, I don't think Jake sounds like Tom Brady after a game. I think he sounds like Tom Brady because he's very nice and he's super polite and he's, well, Jim, this is what I was thinking. Jake is the nicest guy in the world. So I think it's specifically that. Oliver Luck apparently channeling rock star Bob, which is, that's a great comparison for Oliver Luck, because Bob Stelton's got the voice of a Greek god when it comes to his broadcasting abilities. Maura, we will give you first opportunity. Would you like to throw a flag, raise a flag, or pick one up?
Oh, I think I'm going to raise a flag for Marco Gonzalez. I appreciate that he didn't go the no comment route or not really say anything when they asked him how he felt about the sign stealing scandal, and he gave us some insight into how a player really feels about that. And I think it also gives you, hopefully, confidence that he would never be involved in anything like that. You would hope that, you know.
I hope not.
You know, and I heard Jerry DePoto say that yesterday, that they're very confident that they have not been involved in anything like that. I think most people believe that, but I appreciated the way that Marco was very straightforward with his answer with Bob David Moore.
I will say that if they were stealing signs, they needed to do something differently. Because they haven't won.
I started, like, as I was talking, realizing that's where it was going, and I wasn't going to do it.
It would be kind of like when Jesus Montero got suspended for performance-enhancing drugs, where I was like, that was enhanced performance? That? That didn't seem very enhanced. I'm not sure what exactly we were working with there. I think that's a very good point. And I liked the fact that Marco put it in perspective of, hey, as a competitor, it affected me specifically, because I don't throw 98 miles an hour And as he said that, I wondered, we've seen an emphasis on velocity in the game over the past 5 years. And that's not to say, oh, that people had to find some alternative because so many signs are being stolen. It is possible, though, that guys that didn't have that velocity is something that you can't necessarily, even if you know it's coming, you're not going to be able to necessarily catch up with it in the same way you would an off-speed pitch. That's why they signaled for off-speed pitches, to allow guys to sit on those. It was interesting to hear him talk about how that specifically impacted someone.
As a guy who is 5'11", 185, and had to grind my way into the NFL, I don't like that guys are cheating the grind. Just beat a pitcher straight up, and especially, like you mentioned, guys who don't throw the ball 100 miles an hour and have to throw you junk. So let that guy live.
All right, Bump, your turn. What would you like to flag today?
I'm raising a flag for the XFL punt return rules. The Gunners cannot leave until the ball is kicked. Goodness gracious, I have about 900 yards in punt return yards at Washington State. When I was with the Seahawks, I was averaging around 10 to 11 yards a punt return. Man, I might still be playing, Danny, if that was the rule.
I would say this, that I love talking to guys who return punts. You love punt return. Did you like kickoff return, Bump?
No.
And guys that love to kickoff return do not like punt return. They're different skills because in a punt, you're essentially having to watch the ball without much of an understanding of what's around you, and then you've got to almost sight unseen be prepared to make a guy miss.
Yeah, kickoff is straight up. Kickoffs are for like the 100 meter guys. You know what I mean? I'm more of a 60 to 80 meter guy. So with the kickoff, everything's in front of you, and you just have to hit the hole and hope it doesn't close. But in punt returns, that's like backyard football. We used to call it a kill the carrier back home. You throw the ball up, you got the football, run for your life.
My flag is going to be thrown on myself. I'm going to perform a Lydia Cruz and flag myself for criticizing the way in which someone else spoke or addressed the crowd. It's pretty rich for me to call someone else a dork, even though Eli Manning clearly is. And I said that it was game recognizing game, only geek recognizing geek. Someone else pointed out that it's lame recognizing lame. Also, a very fair perspective. I want to thank a few people. I want to thank Jake Heaps for appearing with us the past couple days from down in Orlando. Also want to thank Oliver Luck, the XFL commissioner, for joining us, the Professor John Clayton with the Morning Drive. Maura, we're grateful for everything you did the past 2 days to put our show together. And Bump, it's been absolute blast to work with you. We'll look forward to seeing everybody on Monday at 7. Have a great weekend. It's Danny and Gallant, 710 ESPN Seattle.